the College Football Fix Podcast. With Paul Meyerberg and Dan Wolkin. This is the College Football Fix Podcast from USA Today Sports.
Welcome back to the College Football Fix. We have our college football playoff. Maybe the most controversial decision ever in the tenure history of the CFP committee. Number one, Michigan versus number four, Alabama. Number two, Washington versus number three, Texas. Florida State, unbeaten, but without starting quarterback Jordan Travis, is out. I am not surprised it went this way. My opinion has been out there in a million places on Twitter, on columns. I've written two of them. Paul Meyerberg is here. Paul, we have not heard you explicitly talk about your feelings on what transpired Sunday. I believe I am in the minority among the media members. Our colleagues seem very mad about what happened. Not sure how you feel. So illuminate us. What's your take?
I believe, Dan, that the goal of the college football playoff is to decide the best team in college football. I know that's very controversial, but that is the goal of the playoff, right? In the end game, you have 133 teams. The goal of the playoff and why it was created is to find out which team is number one and which of the 132 teams are not number one. I have no problem at all in that sense of the argument for Florida State getting left out. I do not. But I do want to say this, Dan. To call it controversial, I think, kind of softens it. It's beyond controversial. And I understand it's explosive. And it's potentially destructive if we weren't already headed for a 12-team playoff. Clearly, this would have been a tipping point in a major way 4 or 5 years ago. I understand where Florida State is coming from. But I have to side with the committee on this. You want to have the four best teams, and it's pretty obvious to me and to anyone who is watching that right now Florida State is not one of the four best teams in the country. And if you say most deserving, it's fine, but it's not about that. It's about which team is the best in college football, and Florida State is not one of those four teams. They're just not. And that's, with all due respect, it's what they achieved, where they're headed as a program and all that nonsense, but they are not one of the four best teams, and that's it. I just think it's a simple, simple, simple argument.
Yeah, it is. I've got a million thoughts, but the thing that has struck me the most, I was listening to other podcasts, our colleagues and friends, specifically, you know, yesterday, guys over at The Athletic, Ari Wasserman, Chris Vanini, their podcast, David Ubben was on there with them talking about this. And, you know, it was just striking to me. They all three agreed, all of them agreed that Alabama is a better team than Florida State is currently constituted. Better, not even a question mark in their mind. And yet they absolutely ripped the selection committee for coming to the same conclusion, for saying the same thing. And what it highlights to me is that there's this divide about how people view the playoff. And I've come to realize that a lot of our colleagues and friends view it as a system of rewards and punishments, right? You do XYZ, you get rewarded. You don't do XYZ, you get punished. And I just view it in a, I guess, a more clinical way in that, yes, it is an exercise in determining the national champion. But it's also an exercise in a committee of 13 people every single year getting in a room. And they have a set of facts and circumstances that will change year in and year out. There's no 2 years that are going to be exactly the same. But what is the same, and frankly, what I believe has been applied consistently every single year, is the protocol and the criteria that they are supposed to use. Just as an example, all right, okay, Cincinnati got in 2 years ago, 2021. Somebody mentioned this to me on Twitter, and I think it's a great point of comparison. In that year, you had Alabama beat Georgia in the SEC championship game. That was an upset, if you remember. Georgia was undefeated going in. Just like this year, Alabama beat them. Alabama, one-loss team as a conference champion, was in. Michigan, I can't remember if they had one loss or they were undefeated. I believe they might have had one loss, but they'd beaten Ohio State. No, I guess they were undefeated. And they win the Big Ten championship. They're in. Well, the other three power conferences basically disqualified themselves. Baylor was a two-loss Big 12 champion. They lost to a bad TCU team that you couldn't put them in, right? Pitt was your ACC champion that year. I think they had three losses, couldn't put them in. And then the Pac-12, Utah had three losses, couldn't put them in. They won the Pac-12. So you only had two Power 5 conference champions. Well, Georgia was obviously the next in line. They were not a conference champion, but they were clearly one of the four best teams in that scenario. And so they got in, and then the fourth spot was between Cincinnati and Notre Dame. And it was very clear Cincinnati had beaten Notre Dame head to head. So they get in. That's a totally different set of circumstances than what you have this year, where you had five conference champions that all had resumes that would have qualified them to get into the playoff. And it's why Georgia, even today, I believe Georgia is one of the four best teams. Clearly, I'm sure you do too, Paul. They're one of the four best teams, but they weren't a conference champion. That is a overriding criteria in this exercise. Conference champions. If you are a conference champion that qualifies to get into the playoff on a resume, then you're in the discussion. You had five teams in the discussion. And it's now very clear to me that because of the Jordan Travis injury, Florida State was just going to be number 5 of 5, no matter what. Even if Alabama hadn't won, it was going to be Georgia, Washington, Michigan, and Texas. That's just what it was going to be, because the committee had a very limited data set on Florida State without Jordan Travis. Frankly, just not enough to make a determination about what kind of team they were. And when you have other Power 5 champions who are qualified to be in the playoff, then that is just what they're going to go with. And by the way, like, people say, oh, well, the games have to matter. Yeah, they do have to matter. And guess what? Alabama's games matter too. Alabama was 12-1 with three wins in the top 13 of the committee's rankings. That would make Alabama probably, I haven't done exactly the research on this, but that would make Alabama the best one-loss Power 5 champion ever on resume, most likely. If not the best, right there. So to me, it was just obvious what was going to happen. And the only surprise to me is that so many of our colleagues are so surprised that they took Alabama over Florida State.
Yeah, well, first off, I want to talk about one point you made before going back to the Athletic guys. You talk about data points. Florida State simply did not pass what we might call the Cardale Jones sniff test, which is Cardale Jones coming in 2014 and proving to the committee that Ohio State was not going to take a step back without a starting quarterback. Florida State didn't do that. That's not Florida State's fault. It's a matter of injuries and circumstance. You can't control it. It's out of your control. But they just didn't pass that test. They didn't provide the data points that the committee needed to make this decision. Let's go back to the Athletic guys real quick. I don't know these guys personally, except for Ubbin a little bit. I think they're all great. I think they're all great. Again, but if you are going to make that argument, let's just think about it this way. If you're just going to put Florida State in the field because they're 13-0, why does the committee exist? What's the point of the committee if you're not going to make these decisions? If you're just going to rubber stamp teams, 13-0 or not, and I get the fact that a Power 5 champion is in the Orange Bowl. That's tough, an unbeaten one. That's tough. But if you're not going to have a group make these sorts of decisions, then don't have the group. Don't have the group. Just take whatever you want to do, but don't have the group.
Yeah, or write it into the criteria. The commissioners, when they built this playoff, could have written into the criteria that undefeated Power 5 champions get priority over everybody else. That could have been one of the criteria they put in. It was not. And I remember back in 2011 at some fancy hotel out in Pasadena, California, when they were doing all of this, they were putting together what the playoff was going to look like. I remember asking, you know, Mike Slive, Jim Delaney, John Swofford, all of these people, all right, well, what happens if you have five power conference champions? What happens if a team loses their quarterback in the conference championship game? What happens if the committee wants to put three SEC teams in? What happens if all of these different things happen that would look unusual or would not honor winning games or all that stuff? And The answer to all of those things was all we expect from the committee is that they follow the criteria that we give them. That's all we expect. And their job is not to just, to just say, well, you won X number of games, so you're in. It's an exercise in looking deeper to compare teams. And I just think, what has served the committee very poorly from the start of this thing is the four best teams, just saying four best teams. And the reason they do that is because it gives them the leeway to do things that maybe need to be done that look weird. All right. But I really think it would have been better served to just lay this out and say, yes, it is the four best teams among the conference champions who qualify in the criteria. And if they don't qualify, then we look outside conference champions for the best team among those. And it's a mouthful to say, and it's not simple and clean, but that's the reality. It's never the four best teams, but it is the four teams that meet the criteria to the greatest degree. And one of the criteria is availability of players. It's written right there. Not undefeated, availability of players. That's in the criteria. Undefeated isn't. And I think the people who are upset about it, and I feel for Florida State, man. Like, I'm the original Mike Norvell guy, all right? I have a tweet out there, like, when Memphis was looking for a coach, saying they should hire Mike Norvell because I think this guy's awesome and he's a genius. And I have had a good relationship with Mike Norvell, like, going back to when he was a coordinator at Arizona State. I think he's brilliant. Love the guy. Desperately wanted him on a personal level to have the success and to win a national championship and all this stuff. But, like, this is just the reality of what the system is. It's not my system. It's the system that your conference and the commissioners and all these people wanted. Now, you know, it's going to change, and maybe they're going to learn some things and hopefully correct some things, especially in the way they communicate this stuff. But I just don't think the committee did anything wrong. And I am never going to believe they did anything wrong.
Yeah. Here's a question for you, Dan. I'm interested in your responses. Let's say it's 5 years ago. Do they make the same decision 5 years ago, or are they, did you believe that in some respect, and this is not to argue that they made the wrong one, because you don't believe they made the right decision, but do you believe in some respect the decision was made easier by the fact that this is it, that we're going 12 teams next year?
No, I mean, I don't believe so. I really don't. I think if this had happened 5 years ago, that we would have gotten to a 12-team playoff sooner, for sure. But I just, you know, I'm not sure I believe that. I get what you're saying, though, that it's easier for the committee to screw a team like Florida State because they can say, well, you know, next year this isn't going to be a problem. But I think all of these things, if they wanted to, could be corrected in, you know, something like, oh, undefeated conference champion has to be in if there's a one-loss conference champion, right? They could have corrected. I just don't think there was ever any appetite for that, because the whole point of this thing, and like you said, why else have a committee other than to put the human element into it, to look under the surface and say it's more than about just the record. It's understanding that Florida State's best win, which was against LSU, was Alabama's third best win, and therefore that makes things a little bit different in looking at zero losses versus one loss.
And a follow-up, and this is the question legitimately that I was thinking about last night as I was laying down. If Florida State beats Georgia and Texas wins the national championship, Texas, do you think Florida State will get first place votes in the final poll? And you think they would deserve it as the only unbeaten team in college football? And it's not Alabama, who's 14-1.
Well, in the AP poll, they absolutely will, because there is just this overriding wave of emotion and sentiment, you know, and people talking about, you know, the Jordan Travis tweet. I wish, you know, I'd broken my ankle earlier in the season. Like, I get, like, that is, it's gutting to look at that, right?
It sucks. Sure.
It sucks. So they will get votes if that's what happens. And it might, you know, it might in this deal. But I don't know about the coaches, you know, I don't know, but ultimately it doesn't matter, because we don't do split national championships anymore. The national champion is the team that wins the college football playoff.
Yeah, you're right. And Florida State won't be that team. It's an interesting – there is no comparison, right? When you go back to 04 Auburn, it's a different era. It's 20 years ago, different system. There's just simply no comparison in college football history. And there's no way to predict for me how Florida State responds, like not just against Georgia, but going forward, what this does to the ACC. I just think there's a lot of fallout potentially here, Dan. Is it like too soon and I'm just overrating things? Or is there fallout here that you think could trickle into the offseason, into next season, into realignment? What's the fallout?
Well, I mean, just before we started this podcast, you've got this like 1,000-word letter from Senator Rick Scott demanding, people answer questions. Like we could have a freaking Senate hearing on this. There was it wasn't a tweet. It was a truth, quote unquote, from, the former president, Donald Trump, saying, I guess I can read it. We want to necessarily give him a ton of airtime, but he says Florida State was treated very badly by the quote committee. They become the first Power Five team to be left out of the college football playoffs. Really bad lobbying effort. Let's blame DeSanctimonious. So like this is now part of the Republican primary, which is wonderful. Yes, all of these sort of simmering things coming to the surface. Florida State's uneasiness with the ACC generally. Yeah, who knows where it's going to go? One thing, though, that I think is very clear as well in the way the media is talking about this and a lot of fans are talking about this is the SEC fatigue. I mean, it's just clear as day that a lot of our colleagues were just rooting for it to go a different way because they don't like the chest beating that goes on from the SEC. They don't like people like Peter Burns, who I love Peter Burns. He's a friend of mine. But Peter Burns gets on Twitter all the time and he's like the human version of the, Iraqi, minister of information, GIF, just spilling propaganda right and left. And like that rubs people the wrong way too. The SEC's won 13 of the last 17 titles, but I can also tell you that everything that's gone on in college sports over the last 3 years has turned off a lot of people, or has made a lot of enemies to the SEC. And some of those enemies, frankly, were probably in that committee room this weekend. I don't think they buy the SEC bias or drink the Kool-Aid or anything like that. But I do think they try to look at things fairly. And they saw Alabama knock out in a great game, a very well-played game, an excellent Georgia team. And when people say the SEC is down, yeah, maybe not quite as good as it was, and they didn't have the non-conference wins. They still got like 6 of the top 25. I mean, they've got way more top 25 than anybody, way more top 15 than anybody. It is what it is, man. Like they're the heavy on the block, and they get the benefit of the doubt because of the track record, and the track record is unimpeachable.
Yeah, let's just put quickly into perspective. I know we don't want to look back too much. Alabama beat Georgia. Georgia hadn't lost in 2 years. They hadn't lost in 2 years. They were about to set, if they had won this game, potentially set college football history by winning 3 in a row. And Alabama beat them on a neutral field in Atlanta, by the way. Neutral, yeah, but kind of not.
No, it's 50-50. It's a 50-50, game, crowd.
Still, I'm just saying, let's not diminish this. Let's not say woe is Florida State and diminish what Alabama achieved. I think Alabama achieved this season and on Saturday some incredible things. So, yeah, like to put a bow on my thoughts on it, like I'll cry for Florida State. I feel bad for them. But I believe that this is going to form the best four-team playoff, the most unpredictable four-team playoff, maybe the most star-studded four-team playoff we've ever had. And I am not going to – like I'm drying my eyes as we speak, and I'm moving forward. And I think we need to move forward as college football because what we are getting with these four teams is what we wanted from the beginning. The four best teams, an unpredictable semi, another unpredictable semi, and the possibility that two unbeaten teams meet for the national championship. What else do you want? You want Florida State in there with Brock Glenn? No offense. Or Tate Rodemacher? No offense. I don't want them in there. I want Alabama in there because I want the best college football I can get. I don't want Florida State in there.
Well, I can tell you who didn't want him in there was Michigan, because I'm sure everybody by now has seen, and if you haven't seen it, go look it up on social media, the video of Michigan's team reacting to Alabama showing up in the number four spot. I mean, it's sort of like the sound, you know, I make when I go to a restaurant and they tell me they're out of my favorite dish, right? Like, it's total like displeasure and disappointment. You saw that, right?
Do you know what it was? This is what it was. It was when you were on the streets of Manhattan and you have a friend trying to parallel park into a spot and they go too far and hit the bumper. You do the surrender cobra. Basically, it was an entire 115 team roster doing the surrender cobra about having to play Alabama. It was hilarious. And you know what? I am not going to say that like Michigan is doomed. Michigan can very easily assert themselves on Alabama like they've done to everybody else. But if you want an example of why Florida State shouldn't be in the playoffs, it's because Michigan wanted to play Lem so badly over Alabama. And there you go, because they wanted everything to do with Florida State and nothing to do with Alabama. That seemed very obvious based off their reaction.
Well, and I think the reason why shows up in a game like the SEC Championship. We're going to have a lot of time to look forward. We'll touch on the semis. Let's just look back just a little bit, because you mentioned what Alabama did to beat Georgia. I was in the stadium. Georgia takes the ball, marches right down the field. I think Alabama had the ball first. They go three and out. Georgia gets the ball, and they march right down the field, you know, 80 yards, seven plays, zero resistance. Saban, there's a great clip of Saban talking about, you know, changing the defense, shifting a safety. They basically they changed their front because they were getting making any impact at all defensively on the quarterback, on the running game, anything. And Saban just tells his defensive staff, "All right, we're going to take the plan we had all week long to play this team, and we're going to totally throw it out because we will give up 49 points if we don't." And the rest of the game, they turned the freaking water off on Georgia. Turned it off. And even though the game was obviously close, from about, you know, the 5-minute mark in the first quarter on, Alabama was in total control of that football game.
The last team that I remember doing to Georgia what Alabama did, and it was, even though it was unsuccessful, was Cincinnati in the 21 Peach Bowl 3 years ago. They had not rushed for that few yards since that game. They hadn't had that little success between the tackles since that game. And yeah, I think it's an incredible in-game turnaround that obviously is indicative of Alabama's broader season turnaround, which has been unreal. I can't say it enough. Very clearly to me, the best coaching job of Saban's career, whether they go and win it all or not. But I thought what they did in that game against Georgia, mind-boggling. Because like you, probably from the press box and me on the couch, I said ball game at 7-0. I mean, when they did that, I said ball game. This is a 34-7 game, and Georgia's going to stomp them. So just incredible, Dan, from what they did the rest of the way.
Nick Saban's 11-1 in the SEC championship game. Obviously, that includes time at LSU as well. But 11-1 in the SEC championship game. Like, who could even conceive of such a thing?
And Kirby Smart is now 1-5.
Yeah, I mean, Kirby.
Obviously, he's got the big one, or one of the big ones. But 1-5 against Saban in these games.
It's not good. I mean, they have an Alabama problem. And I know they've won the last two national titles. It's in their head. It's in their head. I think it's in Kirby's head. You know, they lost that game in 2021 and they ended up playing again. And, you know, Georgia fans probably thanking the Lord above that Keely Ringo got that pick six that ended that national championship game in Indianapolis. But, you know, we'll see what happens. They're going to have to go back to the drawing board, at least in some way. Because unless Nick Saban just retires, you know, and maybe, hey, maybe he'll win it again and he just calls it quits. But that was, I just think, yet another example of why you can never count this guy out, because he's just so good. All right, let's talk about another guy who is I not in the Nick Saban category, but obviously like an unbelievable football coach, is Kalen DeBoer. I mean, what Washington did Friday night in the Pac-12 championship game when everybody, including us, thought Oregon was going to roll. I am so impressed with that guy. I'm impressed with his coaching, with his offense, with the way he comports himself, with the way he talks, with the way he communicates to players. You talk about a program in Washington a couple years ago. They had a guy named Jimmy Lake as their head coach. Jimmy Lake, by the way, the guy that Chris Peterson told them to hire. Chris Peterson got out. They said, "You're going to hire Jimmy Lake. He's my guy." And a year and a half into it, they said, no, he is not the guy. And they got themselves out of a dud hire. They went and got Kalen DeBoer from Fresno State, and it has been nothing but brilliant since then. What they did to Washington, I could not be more impressed with the way they played, and I'm so happy for that team, because if you just watch them from the start of the season until now, they didn't always look perfect, but I thought they really, in the biggest moments of the year, showed exactly who they are.
Yeah, and who they are, to me, Dan, is a team that is probably the most confident team in college football. Because I believe that you need to have the, like, and well, let me say this first. Washington beating Oregon, more surprising to me than Alabama beating Georgia. That's how confident I was that Oregon was going to win this game. But I go back to the confidence that Washington plays with, because that's the only way I can describe a team that finds a way to win single possession games every single week. Week after week, 2-3-point wins against Oregon, touchdown wins against Arizona State, against Oregon State, and so on. This is a confident bunch, and I believe really firmly that this, like you mentioned, is Kalen DeBoer from the top down. He's got his fingerprints over everything that they do, and I think that's just incredible. And not to like go on too much of a sidetrack, DeBoer's success to me, I hope people pay attention to the fact that it's obviously there's an aspect of it that's about opportunity, that he got an opportunity at Indiana, for example, and that's what skyrocketed his career. This is a guy who went to Sioux Falls, coached Sioux Falls, who was an offensive coordinator at Fresno at Indiana. Like, he did not take the path that you believe a Power Five national champion takes. So that's an incredible story. And yeah, I just, he's a kind of a blind spot for me. I don't know much about him. I think I've only talked to him one time. I can't really speak to who he is as a person, but it's very obvious to me that the fingerprints or the way that he has touched this team and imbued them with this idea that they're always going to come out on top. I just think that's incredible. So he has played himself, or rather coached himself, into this elite group of teams, elite group of coaches. And there's no doubt in my mind that regardless of who they play, whether it's Texas, that's a game they can win. They can beat Michigan, I believe maybe they can beat Alabama. This is a really good team that in no way, shape, or form backdoored into this thing. They are a truly, truly a representative of the playoff, the way that they have played all year long.
Yeah. Well, I will say this, to spin forward to the matchups, I think the big problem for Michigan against Alabama, I mean, obviously there's a talent issue. Alabama is incredibly talented. They're not perfect. They have some problems. You know, I think we talked about early in the year, where's the game breaker? Where's the wide receiving threat that they've had? They probably don't have that guy, but like Isaiah Bond's become very, very good and very effective. And Milroe has a knack for finding him in big moments. So that's part of the progression of Alabama. But the big problem, I think, for Michigan is December. Like, we've seen this in the playoff every single time Alabama gets in. They improve more in the month of December than any other team. And that's obviously why. It's Saban. But they have been more vulnerable when you flip it to the next week. And remember this year, it's 1 week between the New Year's Day games, the semis, and the national championship. That's the shortest, I believe that's the shortest time period we've had. I could see a scenario where we'll talk about Washington, Texas in a second, but let's just say Washington wins that semi, and let's say Alabama beats Michigan, or even if Michigan wins, I guess, you've got to turn around in a week and prepare for Kalen DeBoer. That is not going to be easy.
That's a really good point, because I do believe that even if it's Texas, the way that you would prepare and game plan for Michigan, for example, is so different than the way you prepare for Washington and even Texas, even though Alabama's played Texas before, so there's a catch there. But let's just say it's Washington. That's so diametrically opposed in terms of what they want to be and who they are that, yeah, that week turnaround demands that you're doing your homework now. And look, they've got the staff for it to be prepped, and I know they're doing their digging right now. But, yeah, that quick turnaround is something to consider, as is this, Dan. Very obvious, because we saw it. Michigan did not prepare for TCU. Like, they were not prepared. They basically took a month. They went to the beach. So I am interested in seeing how they change the way they prepare for Alabama. I mean, obviously, they'll be a little bit more motivated by the opponent. But Michigan, I mean, this is their third time in the playoff, and they have shown an inability to get up for these games and to be prepared for it. So keep that in mind, and I think they will show up against Alabama, but clearly they have done something wrong the last 2 years, and they've got to fix that. They've got about 3 weeks to get it done.
This is so big for Michigan because, yeah, the first time they get into the playoff, they faced Georgia, and they had no chance. They just got run over. The second year, they're big favorites against TCU, and they just kind of threw up all over themselves. I mean, bad calls, turnovers. It was a mess of a game. They were unprepared. They were sloppy. They get beat by a team they never should have lost to. Now you come year three and you're playing Alabama. If they lose this one, it sort of becomes a bit of an indictment on the era. Not that you can take away what they've done and beating Ohio State and winning the Big Ten. Awesome. But it does sort of call into question like what the ceiling really was on this era with Jim Harbaugh. And let's be real, like they don't have better players than Alabama. They don't. And I think it's going to be a real challenge. But I sort of just look at this playoff. I think any of the four teams could make the final, and I think any of the four teams could win it. The one thing I will say is if Washington gets by Texas, I think Washington's winning the final because of that one-week turnaround. And that's really my only prediction. I just don't know if they'll beat Texas.
Want to talk about that game? Because I think this game is awesome.
It's great.
I think it's an awesome matchup. My thoughts immediately are that this is going to become a shootout. And I don't know if that's accurate or not, because I do want to talk about one aspect of this game that I believe will end up being the deciding factor, and that is the way Texas plays up front on both sides. Offensive line, even without Brooks, still getting it done. I do believe that they'll be able to run on Washington. I think they can make Washington very one-dimensional because of the way that their run defense has played. And I'm a little bit concerned for Washington in this game, even though I know they can be inventive and they can manufacture things with Penix and with their excellent receiver core. My immediate concern is that Texas forces their hand and basically turns them into a team that's a little bit more predictable. So that's my concern with this game, Dan. I do think that it's highly possible gets into a shootout, but I believe that if it does, that favors Washington. If it doesn't, obviously Texas has controlled the line of scrimmage and has made this into a game that they can control. So that's my immediate thoughts on it. I don't know if you think it could get high scoring. Pretty obvious to me that Alabama, Michigan will not.
Yeah. I totally agree with that. I do think we need to tip our cap to Steve Sarkisian. We were on this podcast at the beginning of the year saying, show us, you know, if you are this team that everyone's picking to win the Big 12 and get to the playoff because you've got all this talent, show us week in and week out you're going to do it without slipping up like you have done every single year. I mean, if you remember when Steve Sarkisian was the coach at Washington, what was his name or what was his nickname? Seven Win Sark. Well, those days are long gone. I mean, he's done a hell of a job with this team. And I do have to tip the cap because I was skeptical. I just wanted to see it, and we've seen it now. They had some games this year that could have gotten away from them. I mean, they beat TCU like by three. They got very lucky, I thought, in overtime against Kansas State. They should have lost to Houston. Houston, there was like a bad spot. If you remember at the end of the game, Houston was going to go in and try to score at the end and beat them. They were really lucky with the spot there, which was just bad. It was an officiating error. So, like, they've had close calls, too. I think people are maybe a little over their skis on like, just how good Texas is because they played Oklahoma State, who just wasn't up to the moment. I go into the game leaning Washington because of Penix and because of all of those receivers. Like, you know, they're healthy now. Like, they've got multiple threats. They're a handful to deal with, and I go in thinking Washington has just got a little bit of an edge, but and maybe on the sideline too. But I have all the respect in the world for the for how Texas got to this point. And you know, it just validates a lot of things about kind of who they thought they could be when they brought Sark over from Alabama.
Yeah, and this is what they thought they were going to get, and God bless them. I mean, they Sark actually delivered. It's incredible. Again, I don't want to focus only on QBs. I don't believe this is a QB game in the sense that that it's going to be decided solely by quarterback. But to me, if Quinn Ewers plays the way against Washington, and he's not going to throw for 450 yards and four first half touchdowns, but if he resembles that quarterback, the quarterback that basically he's been since he came back from injury, I have a hard time seeing Texas lose this game because of if they will avoid turnovers, if they can strike it big in the passing game and they can stop Washington from running the ball. I mean, that's just an obvious combination of factors that makes me worried for Washington and worried for the Huskies. So I'm going to go with Texas as of right now, and I think they're going to win a game that gets into the 30s. But, like I said, this is such an unpredictable game because both of these teams have at times shown that they're extremely beatable. But when they're on their A game, I don't think that anyone can beat them. So I guess it depends which team shows up. And I hope that both of them bring their A game, because if they do, this is going to be a classic.
Well, and if you end up with Texas winning, it's either Texas versus Alabama part two, which would be fascinating for a whole bunch of different reasons, or, you know, Texas versus Michigan. And you're talking about, you know, two programs that haven't won a national title in quite a long time. You know, big, huge brands, big states, big fan bases. Like it's pretty awesome. So I love the four teams. I love the games. I love the matchups. Again, no disrespect, Florida State. I mean, we said it a million times, but like as far as what we ended up with, this is absolutely what the best of what you could have hoped for at the start of the year.
Yeah, and no one cares about this, and I definitely don't. But TV ratings have stunk. They've been on a decline for a few years. They're not going to stink this year.
Nope.
I guarantee it. These ratings, especially for the Rose at 5 o'clock on the 1st, that is going to be huge. I mean, I, who knows? I'm not a TV expert, but I imagine we're going to see highs, if not ever, highs from going – towards the first year, 2 years of the playoff. I mean, you're going to get a huge audience for this. And if it's Alabama, Texas, or even Michigan, Texas in the final, huge numbers. So I think this is the last ride for Bill Hancock. I don't know if Bill can do cartwheels, but
no, I saw Bill at the Red River Rivalry. He's not doing cartwheels anytime soon.
Okay. Well, he's doing a somersault. Bill can do a somersault. So he's definitely okay. He is clapping his hands very loudly. Actually, no, he doesn't do anything loudly. He's just clapping.
I'll say this about Bill. And by the way, Bill, like, you know, running, like he's very active man. But like I've seen Bill in like casts and, you know, all kinds of things. Like I don't want him to injure himself any more than he already has. So no cartwheels for Mr. Hancock.
Well, we'll do one for him. Okay. For the playoff. I mean, this is. Again, like we're saying, we're beating ourselves, but this is why the playoff exists.
The 14 playoff,
Alabama and Michigan.
14 playoff going out with a bang. All right, we're going to end it here. A little shorter podcast than we normally do, but we just wanted to do a quick reaction to everything, and we both have a lot going on, especially you. So, all right, for Paul Meyerberg, for Eric Smith, our college sports editor, USA Today Sports, I'm Dan Wolkin with the College Football Fix. Thanks for listening. We will definitely be back before the 14 playoff on New Year's Day to break it all down even further. Hope everybody's got a great week ahead and a good holiday season coming up. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you soon.
The College Football Fix Podcast. With Paul Meyerberg and Dan Wolkin. This is the College Football Fix Podcast from USA Today Sports.